everybody. Welcome to tonight's program. My name is Mike Malloy. Thanks for tuning in. No, we're not going to stream video tonight because I feel like warmed over death and still dealing with this pollen stuff. We had some rain here in the North Georgia Mountains, the foothills of North Georgia Mountains today, so that should help. So we'll be back to video streaming tomorrow night. But I just look and feel like something that crawled out from under a wharf in Boston Harbor. Laura Flanders will be here tomorrow night, also Thursday and Friday. Thursday and Friday, we have a two-parter from Bob Alexander about smoking. I know it's weird. It's weird. This is not what he writes about. But if you are a cigarette smoker, I want you to hear this. This is not a kick-your-ass kind of thing. This is a you're going to find this very interesting. So if you smoke, don't forget tomorrow night. All right? Huh? Right? Rachel Maddow has Paul Krugman on. I have smoking tips. Don't laugh. It makes you cough. The difference between major market success and our little radio program here. Remember in the Seinfeld, the Seinfeld series, that the one about no soup for you, the soup Nazi? Believe this or not, I found this a little bit hard to believe, but according to the Associated Press in Dallas, no divorce for you if you're gay. No divorce. A woman named Angelique Naylor got married in Massachusetts to the woman that she got married to. They adopted a baby and then started, like a lot of married couples do, started having arguments and fights that couldn't be resolved. So Angelique Naylor filed for divorce. And that left her fighting both the woman she married in Massachusetts and the state of Texas. State of Texas says that a union granted in a state where same-sex marriage is legal can't be dissolved with a divorce in a state where it's not legal. Right? You can't get married if gay folk cannot get married to other gay folk in Texas. So if you show up and you're already married because Massachusetts or one of the other states that recognizes gay marriage, and you move to Texas, and you're married, and you try to get a divorce, state of Texas tells you no divorce for you. Oh my God. A judge in Austin, Texas, went ahead and granted a divorce anyway, but Texas Attorney General Greg Abbott is appealing the divorce decision. He's appealing it. He's saying, no. He also is appealing a divorce granted to a gay couple in Dallas, saying, and this is what the Texas Attorney General says. He says, protecting the traditional definition of marriage means doing the same thing for the traditional definition of divorce. Oh, my God. OMFG. OMFG squared. Ah! Anyway, tomorrow, Texas State Appeals Court is scheduled to hear arguments on the Dallas case. In the case of the Dallas couples, two men, they declined to be interviewed by the AP, but they're known only as JB and HB in court filings. They had an amicable separation with no disputes on separation of property, no children involved. The couple who married in 4 years ago in Massachusetts has separated 2 years later, simply want an official divorce. Anyway, the attorney says, his client didn't ask for a divorce. We simply asked for the courtesy of divorce. That's all. And FYI, Massachusetts in 2004 became the first state to let same-sex couples tie the knot. Now Connecticut, Iowa, New Hampshire, Vermont, and D.C. also allow them. Gay and lesbian couples who turn to the courts when they break up are getting mixed results across the nation. A Pennsylvania judge last month refused to divorce two women who married in Massachusetts. New York grants such divorces, even though New York doesn't allow same-sex marriages. Oh, my God. Isn't this insane? Isn't this madness? Isn't this just crazy, drooling, booger-eating insanity? Somebody please tell these insane state apparatchiks that marriage is a Oh, never mind. Never mind. Ed Rendell, is he the governor? Yeah, he's the governor of, PA. He's still the governor, isn't he? Yeah. He says the media have been overhyping the Tea Parties. Interestingly, didn't we say something to this effect on this program late last week or maybe yesterday that these Tea Party freaks are getting off? I guess it was yesterday. Getting an awful lot of media coverage. Awful lot of media coverage. And that's because media are waiting, television, I should say, television is waiting for these people to go rabid and start attacking each other. You know, some of these people show up with guns and their automatic weapons and their stupid misspelled signs. And eventually, a couple of them are going to get drunk, and one's going to scream, Sean Hannity is God, and the other one's going to say, Glenn Beck is God, and there's going to be a shootout. Can't wait for that. Oh, man. Wouldn't it be great? Pow, pow, pow. Thud, thud. Anyway, Ed Rendell says the media have been overhyping the tea baggers. The rallies have given us a very small number of people who have actually been attending. Rendell said on was Press the Meat on Sunday to David Gregory, he says, I think, David, the first thing we have to define is what's the Tea Party itself. If you say it's the anger that people feel about the economy, etc., that's giving the Tea Party too much credit. Rendell says, we had two recent Tea Party demonstrations in Washington. One, a week before the health care vote, drew about 1,000 people. The tax day rally, by the organizer's own estimate, was 1,500 people. If I organized a rally for stronger laws to protect puppies, I would get 100,000 people to Washington. So I think the media has blown the Tea Partiers themselves out of proportion. Ah, good God. It really is. It is, you know, these little tiny crowds showing up, and they're usually the same people. Have you noticed that? Same people wearing the same double-knit clothing. Have you noticed that? Same pastel-colored double-knit clothing left over from the mid-70s. There they are, carrying their misspelled signs. A couple of them have a, you know, you think it's a gun strapped to their waist. Actually, it's one of those hole punchers. What do you call those things? Hole puncher? Or it'll be a super big cell phone, right? But they wear it. They show up at the Tea Party and they come strutting on with their Obama is a Nazi moron sign. And they have this hole puncher strapped to their belt. And they, you know, they want anybody to look real close. They'll see it's a hole puncher. Why are you carrying a hole puncher? Ain't no hole puncher. That's my gun. That's a hole puncher. No, it ain't. Look the other way. That's my gun. You sorry little piss ants. Oh, my goodness. Charlie Crist is catching old Billy Hell, as we say in the South, down in Florida. Poor Charlie Crist. Decent guy. Really is. You know, I've said before so many times, I know you're sick of hearing it, that, you know, all Republicans are liars. All Republicans are scum, especially the Republican office holders. And I didn't leave myself any wiggle room. I guess I should have a little wiggle room by saying all elected officials of all political parties are scum and liars. That would give me a little wiggle room. Or by saying most or 98% of all elected members of all political parties are scum, liars, cheats, sneaks, and cowards. But I didn't. I didn't give myself any wiggle room. So I don't know how to get out of this. Except to say that a lot of things Charlie Crist has done as the Republican governor of Florida, I find myself, you know, nodding my head up and down going, yup, 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 that's right, Charlie, yup, yup, yup. Maybe it's because Jeb Bush was such a thug, such a sneaky, lying thug, makes Charlie Crist look good. Or Charlie Crist just looks good on his own. I'm not sure which. But I'll tell you what he did. Kay Petrini, our education correspondent, sent me a quick note about this. You're going to find this interesting. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Love and marriage, love and marriage. They go together like a horse and carriage. This I'll tell you. You can't disparage. Ask the local gentry, and they will say it's elementary. Try to separate them. It's an illusion. Try.
truth seekers, gather around the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Anybody having trouble hearing the program out there tonight? If you are, send me a quick email. And also, in after the next break is over, I'm going to give you an address where you can send Marge, good old Marge of Maryville, Indiana, send her a phone call to her son's address in San Francisco. Marge is in the hospital. We wondered what had happened to her, and we want to send some cards, if you will, to her son. He'll make sure that they are read to her over the phone eventually, gotten to her. All right, would you do that? Thank you. Now back to what we were talking about, the good news for the right-wingers in this country who have been trying for decades to destroy utterly and absolutely the public school system. That became one of George Bush's primary objectives with the No Child Left Behind. George Bush was such a dumbass, though, that he actually figured that what he was doing was a good thing. It was a good thing. But, you know, that village in Texas that kept wandering around looking for its idiot, not realizing that he was setting national school policy. Now, here's the giveaway. Here's how you know that this was a right-wing plot to destroy the public education system. For decades, the right-wingers in this country have been screaming about local control of school boards and school textbooks and school this and school that. They always screamed about that, local control. On the basis that they could run people, get them on the school boards, and replace science and math and history and physics with religion and religion and religion and religion. Also, it would mean that eventually all the schools would go private, where they would charge tuition, and the benighted homeowners who were spending, maybe $125 a year on their property taxes to support the schools would suddenly be free at last. Thank God Almighty, they're free at last. So this has been going on for a number of years. The plan was to utterly and absolutely destroy the public school system. And they're very close to doing it. It took the assistance of the corporate beasts who run predatory capitalism, the entire banking services system in Wall Street or in New York, to bring the public school system to its knees. But they are so close now. So Neil Bortz, who hates poor people, black people, and anybody of color, not just blacks, Bortz has expanded it 25 years ago when he and I worked for the same station in Atlanta. Atlanta consisted of white people and black people. Now it consists of white people, black people, Asian people, South American people, Mexican people, even a few Canadians, Middle Eastern people. So Bortz has a lot of people to hate and disparage on his toy radio program. But again, this has been a goal of right-wingers since, I don't know, how long? Since Reagan? Reagan tried to destroy the public education system in California. When he was governor out there. And then once he got into office, his brain trust decided, okay, let's make our move. So this whole idea of the schools not being able to sustain themselves, is the answer to the wet dream that right wingers have had for three or four decades. And that is to utterly and absolutely and finally destroy everything that public education represents. Get rid of it, kill it, murder it, smash it into the ground. Then what we can do, you see, is have two-tiered education in this country. We can have the elite private schools where a certain class, a very limited, but certain class of young white people can be educated, really educated, to run the corporate machine. Now, when I say really educated, I don't mean they get an education. I mean they're taught to run the corporate machine. And the rest of the people, the rest of the poor suckers who continue to flounder in public classrooms with 40 or 50 kids and one teacher, no art, no music, nothing. Just they will be taught how to sustain the manual labor, working in the mines, digging out the oil, digging out the coal, working on the corporate farms, doing whatever it is that the United States of America is going to be doing once it becomes clear that we are not who we think we are, who we've thought we have been all these decades. All of a sudden, we revert to third world status, And we can do what other countries around the globe do when they are given that classification by the World Bank or the International Monetary Fund. Well, you're a third world country. Oh, we are? Oh, okay. Well, when that finally comes to the United States, we will have what is necessary to keep the machine running. A managerial class that will take care of everything, and the rest of us will continue to slog away in the muck. It's amazing, isn't it, how easy this was. All it took was about 35 years to utterly and absolutely destroy public education in America.
Monkey-free fun and frivolity with Mike Malloy.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those gnats in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real.
It's about 25 before the hour. As promised, before we go back to the topic, Marge, who calls this program a lot, and I know... she has a lot of fans out there who listen to the show. Marge is certainly unique. Half the time, I don't know what her political point of view is. She seems to be an old-style Roosevelt progressive. Would that be right? I guess, huh? But she's a great caller. And we started, as a number of our listeners did, started getting concerned about why we hadn't heard from her. Well, her son sent me an email today and said she's in the hospital. She has some problems. He was not, you know, it's personal family stuff, so he didn't really want to get into it. But she has been there for a while. So if you'd like to send a card, I want to give you his address. And I'm really going to ask the right-wingers who troll this program and send me the disgusting emails about you hope my daughter dies and so on and so forth. Please, this woman's in a hospital. Don't go to all the trouble of going to Target and buying a card and writing something nasty in it, okay? I know y'all are capable of doing that, but, you know, I'm and just my ask you not to will probably make some of you do it, but for Christ's sake, just don't, all right? Good God. Isn't it awful you have to preface giving out an address to send a sick woman a get-well card? You have to preface it with that kind of plea. But that's where we are in this country, right? Anyway, the card should go to Marge, just Marge. But send it to her son. Her son is R.J. Johnson, just like it sounds, R.J. Johnson. And his address is 2694, 2694, 19th Avenue. 2694, 19th Avenue. San Francisco, 94116. The zip is 94116. Let me give it to you one more time. R.J. Johnson, that's Marge's son, R.J. Johnson, 2694 19th Avenue, 2694 19th Avenue, San Francisco, 94116. I'll give it again at the bottom of the next hour, all right? But it would be nice just to get well card, something like that, all right? But, So in the middle of everything bad that's going on in this country, and a lot of it's bad, we have a rising crazy class. There's not that many of them. I mean, the teabaggers will disappear as soon as the next election is over. They would just sink beneath the toilet seat, like groups like this always do. The next election will act as a flushing mechanism, and they will disappear into the sewer of political history, as these groups always do. They'll be gone, you know, gone. But in the meantime, we have to put up with their nonsense and their spokes geeks, the males and females who, for some reason, have decided to make a career out of ripping off the terminally brain dead in this country, the teabaggers or whatever you want to call them, the conservatives, the gun nuts, the militia types. Send me your money so I can buy another leather jacket, is Sarah Palin's latest meme. But eventually they'll disappear. But the financial crisis that we're in, that's going to be around for a while. And the Republicans in the Senate are already talking about no restrictions on Wall Street. Republicans in the Senate, don't forget why they're there. They're not there to govern. They're there to destroy. Conservatives, Republicans, baggers, they are out there. Glenn Beck, the rest of this filth, they are there to destroy. They have one goal: to destroy the middle class. And of course, in so doing, they destroy America as we've either known it or hoped it would become. But that's their objective. It is not to govern. It is to destroy, plainly and simply. You need proof? Look around. Check out the social, cultural, political, economic landscape in the land of the free and the home of the brave. Take a look. Take a look at what their policies have wrought. Only they're not finished yet. The destruction has only reached a certain plateau. The destruction has got to continue until there is no more middle class, until people will go to where there is no more idea of a minimum wage, there is no more idea of Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid. Everything will be done either through church, evangelical, sick, rapture-style church charity, or you can go to work for the man for $8 an hour, or six, or ten, or four, or whatever they can get you and your spouse and your child or your niece or your nephew to come in and work. This is the goal, damn it. Look at the profits posted in the past couple of days by the most predatory corporations ever devised in the history of the human race. Companies like Goldman Sachs, companies like Citicorp, companies like Wells Fargo. Take a look at what these predatory bank bastards have done. Look at the landscape. Look at the debris. And then check out the filings that they have posted out there for the fools to see about how much money they have ripped out of the society in the past quarter. Quarter. Public education has, to a greater or lesser degrees over the years, been the bulwark against corporatism, fascism, whatever you want to call it. It has been one of two or three homogenizing forces within the American society, such as it is, that has kept Americans, generation after generation, alert and aware that, as the right-wing scum like to say, because they stole it from us, freedom isn't free. You really have to guard against people like the baggers, people like the right-wingers, like the Republicans, like the conservatives, because they're out there to devour everything. They want everything. Everything. And the most important thing to these right-wing freaks is to be on the top of the heap, to be in that top one-tenth of 1%. And the rest of us can, you know, pound sand into whatever body orifice is not bleeding and ragged from the kind of abuse that these people like to dish out. So anyway, the school districts around the country are sinking. They're sinking because there is no money. Now, this could be corrected In the time it takes to have two roll call votes in the House and the Senate and one signing ceremony with President Obama. That's how quick it could be done in one day with legislation that simply says you can put it in the proper language. I'm just, you know, shooting from the hip here, but something to the effect of, because the American public education system is deteriorating at a rate that means the entire society is going to collapse in a pool of ignorance, stupidity. We, the representatives of the people in the House and the Senate, have decided that we are going to budget enough money to make sure that every single school district in the United States of America, coast to coast, border to border, has enough money to properly educate our children for the next 5 years. And then a caveat at the end that says, if at the end of 5 years the economy has not improved, we'll do this again. And then appropriate the money. Now, how much do you think it would be? Huh? How much do you think it would be? We, that is the United States, Barack Obama, recently signed a murder budget, that's the, quote, defense, end quote, budget, to the tune of, what was it, $800 billion. Now, how much money do you think it would be, how much money do you think it would take to rescue every single school district in the United States for the next 5 years and maintain those school districts at a level they were maintained at, say, during the Clinton years? I don't like Bill Clinton, but everybody was working back then. Even though they were working for imaginary companies, they were still working. A lot of tax revenue came in. The nation found itself awash in black ink. School districts didn't have to fire people. They had to figure out what the hell to do with all their money. But then Bush came in and destroyed everything. So, how much do you think it would take? $800 billion is what we Americans say, oh, well, we got, yeah, we're going to have that for weaponry, for Empire America that is dying. The stench is already out there if you want to smell it. It smells like depleted uranium. It smells like decaying bodies in Iraq and Afghanistan. It smells like some of the amputated wards at Walter Reed or Bethesda. So how much do you think it would take out of $800 million that we spend, we Americans spend, somehow we get it. I don't know how we get it, but we get it, right? For death and destruction. How much of that? Of that $800 billion. How about a quarter of it? How about $200 billion? You think that would save the schools? You're damn right it would.
It's Good News Week. Someone's dropped a bomb somewhere, contaminating atmosphere and blackening the sky.
To practice your synchronized screaming, it's Mike Malloy.
Tabby for the hour. Oh, and by the way, Laura Flanders is going to be here after the break at the top of the hour. I didn't even mention that, did I? Go to lauraflanders.com and you can find out all you want to find out about her her program, Grit TV. It's on Free Speech TV, I think, four times a day. So check it out. She's going to join us, too. Back to the education thing, the destruction of public education that has been four decades in the making. Even longer than that, if you want to go back to what the patrician class, the overseers, really wanted to bring about in the 20s and 30s. But the way this is being presented, I want you to hear, this is from New York Times. Whether the current estimates of, you know, school teachers being fired, whether the current estimates rise or fall, get this, will depend in part on labor negotiations underway in hundreds of districts. Oh, and on how taxpayers vote on school levy proposals in many states and towns. But those adjustments will affect the likely layoff numbers only at the margins. Labor negotiations. Why, of course. You see, this is a twofer. Not only do you get to destroy public education, but in the process of taking that institution down, you also get to destroy the teachers' unions. And the teachers' unions, like the nurses' unions, are some of the last holdouts, and the public employee union, well, that's what teachers' unions are, are the last bastions of organized labor in the United States. Corporate America has effectively gutted the labor movement for a number of reasons. First of all, the first and most obvious, it was very simple. Corporate America would say to the workers, say the union bosses, all right, I'll tell you what. Either negotiate the way we tell you to, or we'll move the company to Egypt. So where's the, you know, what kind of a reaction do you have to that? I watched Ron Gettelfinger, the head of the UAW, give back and give back and give back and give back hard-won contract agreements over the years to the three major auto manufacturers until there was nothing left to give back. And then the company's bankrupted or went for a handout or a bailout or whatever you want to call it. By the way, General Motors has paid back all that money. Chrysler looks like they're not going to make it. But for years, the auto industry, this is not pro-car. I think the auto industry sucked. I'm talking about the workforce, the laborers. For years, if you got a job in the automotive industry, the chances are you could join the middle class if your family wasn't already in it. So the labor movement had to be destroyed. It's been effectively destroyed. The last holdouts with any power are teachers' unions and nurses' unions and American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees, AFSCME, organizations like that. But they're slowly going down too. And now the teachers' unions are being told, all right, boys and girls, here's the deal. You want to continue on your 60 grand a year, your 70 grand a year because you've been there for 12 years. You want to continue with a class size of 20 students, 28 students. Well, it's not going to happen. So the first thing you do, I'll tell you what, we'll hire you back next year at 35,000. Bastards. Los Angeles, Superintendent Ramon Cortinas sent notices to 5,200 of the district's 80,000 employees last month, telling them they're losing their jobs. Cortina said, quote, I've been superintendent in five major school districts and had responsibility for cuts for years, but not this magnitude, not this devastating. And there's no end in sight, he said. He cut his district's $12 billion budget this school year by $1 billion, has prepared $600 million in cuts for the term beginning in the fall, and is looking ahead to a deficit for the following year of $263 million. Cortinas added, quote, I don't see this being over, even in the year 2014-2015. Now, in an economic stimulus bill passed back in February of 2009, Congress appropriated about $100 billion in emergency education financing. States spent much of that in the current fiscal year, which saved 342,000 school jobs in the nation's 15,000 school systems. States will spend about $36 billion of the stimulus money in the next fiscal year, leaving their budgets short by some $144 billion. Now, what did I say? $200 billion might provide them with everything they would need. That's all. $200 billion a year, 25% of what we're spending on death and destruction. And not just death and destruction, what we spend to finance the weapons industry so that that class of corporate predator can be wealthy.
Well, Mike, what, you're talking about not defending America? You want America to let its guard down? Well, you know what will happen. The terrorists will come. Or the communists will come. Or the Venezuelans will come. Hell, the Canadians might attack us.
So here we are. Warning of an education emergency. Senator Tom Harkin, Democrat of Iowa, proposed a $23 billion school bailout last Wednesday. that would essentially provide more education stimulus financing to stave off the looming wave of school layoffs. Senior Democratic aide said that because Mr. Harkin's bill would add to the deficit, it was unlikely to pass. Huh? Unlikely because it will add to the deficit? That's a phony baloney number. We got the Federal Reserve. We can print money until hell freezes over. The deficit? Oh, that's right. That's what the baggers are concerned about. Of course, they don't know what deficit spending is. They don't have a clue. We'll take a break and be back and be joined by Laura Flanders. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Seven past the hour. We do not have Laura on the phone, so we'll see if she is just otherwise detained or busy or forgot about us. Oh, Laura. Meanwhile, back to the education crisis that we're facing. According to Arne Duncan, it's an education crisis, meltdown, disaster. Now, this is the same guy who said that the best thing that happened to the education system in New Orleans was Hurricane Katrina. He did. It was in the Washington Post interview. Because it forced that community to take steps to improve low-performing public schools. So what we have here is another purveyor of disaster capitalism. And a guy who applauds the shock doctrine policy. And he's now Barack Obama's Secretary of Education. In addition, you know, he was in the he was the head of the Chicago school system, right? For how long? 6 or 7 years? 8 years? I've got it here. 8 years. During that time, Chicago Public Schools from 2001 to 2009. During that time, Chicago Public Schools fourth grade math scores slowly rose from 214 to 222. That's over an 8 year period out of 500 or 8 points. Now, that sort of testing, that is not the sort of testing that is designed simply to make sure that school districts continue to get No Child Left Behind money. Those are actual tests about how are the kids doing. Miami, Houston, New York had higher scores than Chicago on the National Assessment of Education Progress. Boston, San Diego, and Atlanta had bigger gains. So it looks like Arne Duncan is maybe not the guy for the job. The best thing that happened to the New Orleans public school system was Hurricane Katrina. Don't you just feel little twinges in your gut when you hear the Secretary of Education, for example, in this case, say something like that? Email here from June. Mike, I'm a retired professor of education, 40 years experience in the field, 5 years teaching kindergarten in public schools, and two of those were in a ghetto school in Houston. My great concern was how best to teach the children. Even back in the 60s, we realized that the most effective thing we could do was lower the student-teacher ratio, especially in the low-income deprived communities. When Lady Bird and LBJ declared war on poverty in 1964 or so, Congress allocated great sums of money to research what we could do. The research showed clearly that smaller classes were one of the most effective things educators could do. Quality teachers also helped. And one of the most important things was to begin early. What is learned first is the longest lasting knowledge. So early education is the most critical time. We have seen decades now of people who are not trained in pedagogy making decisions on what to teach and how to teach it. What works in business is not the most effective way to manage education. We saw Texas schools make serious declines after the recommendations of Ross Perot were implemented. Then Reagan cut funds, especially for early education programs. Here in Texas, we got the influence of George W. Bush, which increased the testing and decreased the efficiency. The dumbing down of America is in full swing. Dr. June and her last name, and thanks, June, for writing. Hi. And this comes from Ray in Arizona. Mike, tonight you're getting close, quite close, to the truth regarding public education, but let me get you closer. When there were separate but equal educational systems neatly wrapped inside American apartheid, it mattered little how great or puny a school district's scholastic level of achievement was. A white man could and did ignore a black man's qualifications and keep career positions and union jobs among whites. Once American apartheid was dismantled, per the enlightened decisions of the U.S. Supreme Court in a moment of social and political lucidity in the 60s, it was necessary for the powerful to blow up the public school system, to limit the dilution in the workforce, and to maintain complete control. Welcome to post-racial America. Ray in Arizona. Yeah, that too, huh? It's pretty astonishing to me to all of a sudden, and I say all of a sudden because apparently I haven't paid too much attention to this. We're paying attention to it now because we have a kid, Kathy and I, about to enter first grade in the public school system in Georgia. And it's been an absolute, I want to say, mind F, but I'm not allowed to say that on the radio. It has been quite an interesting experience. The first 3 years of Molly's education, preschool and kindergarten, was at a school that, I wish we could just continue in forever, run by a Presbyterian church. Then that make you think, what the hell is he saying? A Presbyterian church? No, it wasn't religious education. But I wish that we could continue with that group forever because they're that good. But such is not the case. And it was very cheap. I think it cost us like $300 a month. You know, you can't get babysitting for that, right? So now Molly starts first grade into the public school system here in Georgia. And the schools that are closest to us are all being closed. So we've had to take advantage of a bill or a law passed a year or so ago in the Georgia legislature, that was designed to, it had racist undertones to it. Anything that happens in the old Confederacy, I don't care where it happens. If it's one of the old Confederate states, one of the old states here in the South, it does have racist overtones. It has an appearance of, oh, well, we're going to try to educate all the little children. No, you're not, you lying bastards. But the Georgia General Assembly passed a bill that would allow parents to transfer their children to a better school if certain conditions were prevalent that the parents felt required to transfer. And it was designed, again, it was designed to aid and assist white people to get their children out of failing schools. What they didn't consider was the fact that schools were going to close. So the schools closest to us are closing. The elementary schools are closing. They're closing in June. I don't know where the teachers are going to go. I don't know where all the people who work in these schools are going to go, but they're closing. And this is just one county. Next year, they're talking about closing seven more elementary schools. Where are children to be educated? So we are trying, or we have tried, to do one of two things. Either tuition Molly into a different public school system. That's right, tuition into a different public school system. Or get her a transfer to another school within the system in the county that we live in. And it's been a battle. I think about, and I'm sorry, this is going to be one of those Grand Torino, you kids get off my lawn moments, but I can't help it. The public education that I got, and I never went to private school, I always went to public schools, was phenomenal. When I think back on the public education I got in elementary school and then high school, secondary school, and the subjects that we learned and the depth of discussion, the science, the math, the foreign language, these were all required. And again, I understand I was being tracked just like all the kids in my cohort were being tracked. Some, I mentioned this the other night, some of us into academic studies, some of us into non-academic studies. So, I understand the viciousness in the school system back in the 40s and 50s and even 60s. But the education I did get that was a public school education compared to what's available now, plus the fact that we had mandatory phys ed, art, and music. Had to have it. And I look what's available now, and it's heartbreaking. It's infuriating. It's not just heartbreaking. I want to sit around and cry about it. I want to break somebody's face about it. You know what I'm saying?
Let's start with something simple, like one and one ain't three. And two plus two will never get you five. There's fractions and my subtraction, and X don't equal Y. But my homework is bound to multiply.
Hey, truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour, and how quickly the public school system in this country, the financing for it, has disappeared, has dried up. I guess there are too many people of color, you know, too many immigrants, too many this, too many that, and you know what self-respecting middle class or teabagger type white family wants to support illegal immigrants or brown people or Asian people or, you know what I'm saying? Or am I putting too much emphasis on it? I don't think so. I live here in the South, so that does color my, so to speak, point of view. But I know how it works in the rest of the country too. Racism does factor in here. It does. It just does. The other factor is priorities. What kind of a nation doesn't place education of its children as the number one priority? Seriously, other than us, who else does this? What other country spends more on bombs and tanks and cluster bombs and landmines and poison gas and depleted uranium than they spend on educating their 5 and 6 and 7 and 10 and 12-year-olds? Huh? What country does that? I'll tell you what country does that. A country that is dying. A country that is smelling its own stink as it starts to rot. That's the country that does that. That's us. That's the United States of, by God, America. Now, the right-wingers will tell you, hey, government schools, they just teach you garbage. Go to religious school. Yeah, that's what the Taliban says, or the you know, fundamental religionists. I don't care if they're Jewish or Christian or Islam or Hindu. That's right. Educate your little darlings in religious schools. That'll help. That'll advance the human race, won't it? That will develop science and technology in an attempt to, undo the damage we've done over the past 150 years to the environment, or help us try to escape this little green glob that's about to implode anyway, or whatever. Nah, teach him about sky spooks. Teach them about arguing about little fine points in Torah. Teach them about how many incarnations it takes before they escape the wheel of birth and death. Teach them about the 72 virgins waiting if they just go blow up a Christian. Or whatever. Teach them about the rapture.
Well, don't worry about anything. You don't have to get educated. You don't have to educate the kids because, you know, Jesus is coming. And we're all going to rapture up to heaven.
Yeah, teach him some fundamentalist religious crap. That'll help. I get too pissed off about this, I guess. You know, I really do. I've got adult children who have children. And all the kids in our family, with the exception of my long-dead father, who was educated at a private Jesuit school, but all the people in my family went through public education system. My son, my daughters, their kids, their spouses. How much longer before it's not even going to exist? And these are kids who all got good educations. I don't think any of my children or grandchildren. And I worry about Molly because here comes Molly now, you know, on the tail end of this madness. I don't think any of my kids were not exposed to an excellent public school education. Of course, my youngest, up from Molly, is now 31. So this really strikes home with me. I think about the public education I got and people of my generation, what we got. I think about what my older adult children, my younger adult children, what kind of a public education they got. And then I take a look at what is going on now. City after city, school district after school district over the years. No, defeated. How many times were millage rates defeated that would be targeted exclusively for public education, public schools? How many times have people said, oh, no, I ain't paying no more taxes. What
are they teaching them in school? Music? Art? Hog's not. I didn't have art.
No, of course you didn't. Study after study indicates that kids that have music appreciation do better in math. And yeah, it's a direct cause and effect. It's not, what was the term we were discussing the other day? A cause and correlation? No, was that what it was? Yeah, it's not. Yeah, correlation versus what? Causation. It's not that. Cause and effect. You put a kid into music appreciation starting when he or she is 4 years old. By the time that kid isn't, and do it every year, by the time that kid, and you know, when the kid gets a little bit older, can handle an instrument, start teaching him or her how to read music, meter, scale, so on and so forth. By the time that kid gets into third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh grade, you have a child who perfectly understands math concepts. But no, let's get rid of music. What the hell's that about? We'll be back after the break.
Born in Germany and in France, and someday I might get my chance. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. And what did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned our government must be strong. It's always right and never wrong. Our leaders are the finest men, and we elect them again and again. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school.
Coast to coast, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
About 25 before the hour. From Roz in Canada. Hi, Mike. Like I said in an earlier email to you, it's back to the dark ages for Americans and the rest of us too, no doubt. Nothing cultural being offered in school. How can war toys be more important than schools and hospitals? We will all be raising a generation of trolls in the future, fodder for the service industry, jobs in the mines. It can be stopped if people wake up now, but as long as you have wingnuts like the mentally slow right, well, the job will be made that much harder. Canada is following in the footsteps of the States at a rapid pace. We will continue doing so as long as we have Stephen Harper as Prime Minister. He is not an original thinker and replaced Blair as the U.S. President's lapdog. And so it goes. Roz. Robert is in Denver listening on XM. Hey, Robert.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, well, it's not, you're pretty excited tonight, Mike.
Yeah, nothing other than being lied into a war, I think, makes me angrier than to understand that our education system is not the top priority in this country.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned that you went through the public schools, and so did I. I noticed that when I graduated way, way back in 67 from high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went in the Marine Corps, and then I started hearing things like they stopped having chess clubs.
Right.
You know, I'm originally from St. Louis. They stopped having chess clubs, and they stopped having the girls' softball team.
Uh-huh.
The freshman softball team, they were cutting those things out, and I wonder, What was this going to? What was the reason? And this might be far-fetched. This is, you know, I might be thinking out of my head, but could it be that the private sector saw an opportunity to start something years and years and years ago to get some of the public funds over to the private sector? Like schools and you know, even if you're working on the job, there were some jobs that were saying, oh, this is going to be a private sector job from now on, rather than...
Well, yeah, absolutely. You're not thinking, as you said, out of your head. This is for real. This has been going on, the privatization of everything, even down to the point where the U.S. government now hires private organizations to conduct our torture, private organizations to bodyguard our invading diplomats who, after the Marines have landed, our diplomats go in and set up whatever kind of operation is necessary to subdue the indigenous population. And those people are no longer guarded by the Marines. The Marines are needed to go out and fight. I don't know, whoever it is we're fighting. So, yeah, the idea of privatizing everything we can privatize, water systems, utility companies, education, war fighting, everything is being privatized, of course, because that is the goal of corporate America in this case, but corporate anything. That's the goal of capitalism. Nothing should remain as part of the public domain. Yeah, because anything that's part of the public domain or is run by the people, for the people, of the people is obviously socialist and communist. Thanks, Robert. Appreciate your checking in. Yes, it's madness. Even religion's being privatized too, isn't it? Right. All you have to do is just look, watch television sometime during the day. I've spent some time doing that in the past couple of weeks with this damn allergy cough because I can't go outside. Oh, my God. But some of these religious freaks, monsters, murderers, killers, soul suckers that are on television during the day, it's corporate religion. And, of course, the worst one of all that, now that the other one is dead, is Pat Robertson. He's the worst. Karen is in Ventura, California, listening online. Hello, Karen.
Hi, Mike. I am here.
Yeah,
thank you very much. And I share your concern about the fate of our public schools. I think that it is now set up currently so that the public school system will fail.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I think the goal is to privatize education. I see it happening here where I live. I may tell you what I do. For 15 years, I'm a special teacher who goes from school to school doing social studies, field
mm-hmm.
trip.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen the change. For 15 years, I've seen what has happened. And last year in California, with our huge, you know, problems here with our, state budget, last year, the schools were supposed to close. Some did, and they became charter schools, which is basically a privatized school, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And what I've seen this year, sadly, is that I've learned that here we are in the last weeks of school, and in a Los Angeles school district, they are putting teachers on furlough.
Right.
For the week of May 24th to 28th. That's basically the end of the school year. The testing has been done. What is this about? You know, the teachers' union have no power to say, no, we're not going to do this. The schools are just shutting down for a week out of the blue.
Yeah. Yeah. That's happening. It's happening more and more around the country. We can blame anyone we want to. I blame the Wall Street meltdown. I blame the corporatization of everything in this country. But when you get right down to it, it's a matter of priorities. The American people have allowed ourselves to be pushed around like a bunch of damn sheep by the fascists, by the corporatists, by the upper 0.1% who don't give a tinker's damn whether a million of us live or die. As a matter of fact, I think they wish probably 20 or 30 or 50 million of us would die, to make it easier for them to get around the country. But it's a matter of priorities. We the American people have allowed our public education system go right down the toilet. Every time we've gone to the polls and voted no on a school tax levy, voted no, to increase the millage on our property in order to raise a couple of million dollars for schools, or voted no on a local sales tax when local government said, but if we don't have it, we're going to have to close this down, we're going to have to close that down. And immediately, as soon as the issue comes up, the conservatives, the Republicans who want to destroy everything in this country and turn it over to private enterprise, private corporatism, they come out and they say, well, now, are you going to vote in favor of a tax? Look at this guy. Look at this Democrat. He voted for 164 tax increases over his political career. Maybe he did, and every single one of them was to benefit the public sector. They want to kill the public sector, Karen.
Yes, they do.
Absolutely, and murder it.
Yes, I agree. And, you know, last year what saved California schools was the stimulus money.
Right.
And that saved, you know, thousands of jobs. But now that money is no longer available. And I agree with you totally. Your solution is right on. Think of the money that could be poured into the schools instead of into the military.
It's awful.
You know, 53% of every dollar
right.
taxpayer money goes toward the military. And another thing is they want the kids to fail, in my opinion, in high school, because if they drop out, there are no jobs right now. And so what do they do? What do the kids do?
Guess where they wind up. Yeah.
That's where they wind up.
It is. Karen, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Thanks a lot. I appreciate what you had to say. 53 cents of every tax dollar. I saw that number the other day. I thought, gee, is it that high now? If we took half the murder budget, which would be $400 billion, and put it into education in this country, imagine. That would only leave $500 billion for the murder budget. Oh, my God. How could we possibly survive, right? Isn't it true that if you combine all the other military budgets of every other country that has a military budget on Earth, combine them, compare it to the United States, that we still outspend that combined total by degrees of magnitude, orders of magnitude, I should say. It's not like we spend half again as much. We spend 4, 8, 12, 15 times as much. It's madness. Does anyone think in the Obama administration that the United States is going to succeed at whatever it is we're supposed to be succeeding at by continuing to do this? Is that rational? Is that sane?
As a brick. And the love that I feel is so far away. I'm a bad dream that I just had today. And you shake your head.
Cleaning up America one flying monkey at a time. It's more Mike Malloy.
What, the music die again? 10 before the hour. Gee, we need to get some new mini disc players, don't we? Oh, my God. Couple emails here. Here's from Epi10. Technology for morons. What's the point? Referring to education. What good is a computer when you can't do long division, much less factor a polynomial? What the hell is a polynomial? What good is an MP3 player that holds 12,000 songs, not one of them by Mozart, Beethoven, or the Beatles? What good is a paintbrush if all you can paint is a ceiling? What good is a high-def plasma TV screen the size of your living room wall when all it's used for is watching American Idol and playing Super Mario? What good is science when you can just shrug the wonders of nature off as a miracle from a sky spook? What good is a pill that will extend human life to 300 years for a population that can't even reach their potential in 100 years of life? Watching this country die is like the scene in Space Odyssey, where Dave pulls out Hal's higher brain circuits. I'm glad I grew up in the 60s. That's all I got to say.
Daisy, Daisy, give me your answer to Dave. I can feel it, Dave. Dave, stop. Stop, Dave. Will I sleep, Dave?
Yeah. Oh, God. I love that movie. I love that one and The Shining. Whew. Both of them by you know who. This is from Ellen, who writes, another important reason the corporatists want to destroy public education is to destroy the teachers' union. Just more union busting. I'm sure you know this and have gotten to it. I just think it's very important to include when discussing the destruction of public education. Yeah, we just mentioned it, Ellen. Minnesota, Ellen writes, has a particularly strong teachers union relative to other parts of the country with a brilliant leader, Tom Dewar. His grandfather was assassinated in the late 30s for his union activities. Dewar really gets it. Please continue to fight the I can't say that word anymore, Ellen. The blank power. Thanks, Ellen. Regarding Minnesota, Raging Lefty writes, dear Mike, our dictator, Pawlenty, decided not to give the schools 27% of the money budgeted to them and thereby forced them to borrow funds. This strategy allows Governor Pawlenty to keep his no new tax pledge to the Grover Norquist tax evaders, and has the added bonus of putting our schools into hock for the near future. Pawlenty is desperate to become the next president so he can rule over the ruins of the American empire. No doubt, if he who would be emperor has a chance, he would force Social Security to borrow money so he can continue these filthy wars. Oh, wait a minute. I think that was already done. Raging lefty. And then he sends me something from the Daily Planet, Newsday. Mary Turk writing. Oh, this was several months back. With Governor Pawlenty's, quote, solution, end quote, to Minnesota's budget crisis mandating delays in payment of state aid, more than one-third of Minnesota schools will have to borrow money to meet payrolls until the delayed aid is finally delivered. That means school budgets and taxpayer money will go to banks to pay the interest on borrowed money, not to pay teachers or heat classrooms. Chris Lienin, Director of Business Services at Bemidji, is that right? School said, quote, our total cost of borrowing is going to cost about $70,000 over the course of this year. Chris Lennon said the school district made the decision to borrow after Pawlenty delayed $1.2 billion in state payments to schools as a part of his plan to balance Minnesota's budget. It is an accounting trick that delays a portion of state school payments until the next budget cycle to balance the current budget. The director of business services, Chris Lienin, said the shift means the school district is coming up short about $1 million a month. Well, it just, this is from Chico, or no, this is from Dennis. Mike, I'm a product of California public schools. I learned a boatload of stuff, and I make a good living and have health insurance as a result. We also own a home and can pay for our kids' college. I can tell you we are slashing the source of our wealth, our wonderful public education system in California. We are killing the golden economic goose. It's crazy. It's a total downward spiral. Without an educated workforce, the economy dies. My children, however, will escape this spiral, but just barely. It's the kids behind them who will suffer. Reagan started the anti-education movement in California when he nearly ran the state into the ground as governor. We're hoping that Jerry Brown can bring us back from the cliff once again. Dennis. Man. I think that's one of the things that I've said it earlier tonight. One of the things that upsets me more than anything else is to be a citizen in this country, to see the madness that is sloshing around inside our boundaries, unlike anything I've seen in my lifetime, just utter political madness. When you have a crazy person out in Nevada who is leading in the polls, leading Harry Reid, and this crazy person who wants to be senator is suggesting that you pay your doctor bill with chickens. Use the barter system, she says. Back in her parents' day, her grandparents' day, people used to pay for their doctor visits with a bushel of corn or chickens. And this woman is ahead of Harry Reid in the polls. This is the madness. Why do people not like Harry Reid? Because he's a lousy senator or because he's a Democrat? You know why. We've had lousy senators since we've had political parties. This is, I mean, that's where we live. You people in Canada that are listening, you people in South America that are listening to this program, you people in Australia and New Zealand and Asia, other parts of Asia and Europe that are listening to this program, you don't know how goddamn lucky you are. Oops. 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. I'm just watching replay of Rachel's program earlier tonight, Rachel Maddow's program on MSNBC. And she, in the segment she was doing, she was pointing out some letters of complaint from the recent, one of the recent teabagger demonstrations in Washington, D.C. And some of the teabaggers were trying to get to a national park outside of D.C. or inside D.C. or maybe in Virginia. Anyway, they took public transportation to go to a national park. And they wrote letters to the public transportation company, I don't know what it is in D.C., complaining that the train cars that they had to ride on were not adequately cleaned. Now, these are people that had gone to Washington to complain about government spending, socialism, and so on and so forth, on their way to a national park on public transportation, bitching about the condition of the train cars. I mean, what you know, what do you do with that? What do you do with that? You laugh, you cry, you think about the woman who's leading Harry Reid out in Nevada. I hope I got that right, by about 10 percentage points, and she believes you should pay your physician with a chicken. If you don't have health insurance and you're unemployed, take a chicken. You know, or a bag of corn, or I don't know, maybe some tobacco leaves. I don't know. And it's just madness. Mark in Reno, Nevada writes, Mike, I don't quite understand your last comment on Reid. I'm very unhappy with Reid because he's a spineless, and at times I think he is a Democrat in name only. I would appreciate your thoughts on Reid. I'm caught in a dilemma. I'm hard-pressed to vote for this weakling, yet I cannot ever vote for a Republican. Ever been in this position? And what did you do? Well, yeah, I've been in that position every time I've voted for about the past 35 years. I don't know, Mark. I guess what you do is, and I'm not trying to be a smartass with you here. I mean this because this is what was told to me. You know, I've had the same complaint. You don't wait until, you know, 6 months before the voting is to occur. You wait until a day after the votes are counted. And you realize that whether you, if you voted Republican, you're insane. If you voted Democrat, you're being fooled once again. So then what you do, if it's a Senate race, you spend the next 6 years either organizing your own campaign or finding somebody with some political experience who is not a Democrat, who is not a Republican, who is certainly not a Republican, but somebody who believes in our political system, who shares your ideas, who is a true progressive or a true liberal, or a true democratic socialist or social democrat, however you want to say it, and you bust your ass to get that man or that woman elected. Now, that's I realize that's the creepy answer. You know, we're in the age of if something lasts longer than 2 or 3 minutes, it's an epic, and I understand that. But and here I am talking about waiting till the day after the votes are counted, then working for the next 6 years to get a real progressive or a real social democrat elected. I don't know what else to tell you. If you're asking me what to do this November in voting in Nevada, I have not a clue. I have not a clue. What have I done in the past? Confronted with what you're confronted with? I voted for the Democrat. And you notice that little bit of that little shame sound in my voice. But I'll tell you, they can be threatened to boil my puppy in oil before I would ever vote for a Republican. I don't care what the issue is. I do not care what the issue is. Republicans, conservatives are scum. Absolute scum. And they're trying to destroy my country. So. And doing a damn good job of it, aren't they? Huh? Aren't they doing a good job? Yeah, there you go. Chris is in Atlanta listening on XM. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. How are you this evening?
Hey, fine.
I just wanted to chat with you about your views on the public school systems. And first of all, let me tell you that I am a product of the public school systems here in the South. I'm in Atlanta and born and raised in Georgia. And I'm a supporter of public schools.
Mm-hmm.
However, I take exception with your comment about comparing folks who want to send their children to religious schools, you know, and comparing them to the Taliban.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, and the other thing I take exception to is that if they voted against a tax increase, a sales tax increase, or a millage rate related to a tax, what would be a school tax,
mm-hmm.
that they're somehow anti-public school. When the reality of it is that we can't trust government to do what they say they're going to do with our tax dollars anymore.
You're a Neil Bortz fan, aren't you?
No, I don't listen to him.
Oh, come on, Chris.
No, I don't, honestly. I don't think, because he comes on during the day, I believe, and I work during the day.
Well, but, it sounds like what Bortz talks about. In the first place, when you say you can't trust who? Now, say that part again.
You can't
trust government, I think you said.
Well, no. If they're saying that, okay, we want to raise the sales tax specifically for public school,
right?
There's no way to guarantee that they're not going to put that money into the next Atlanta Falcons stadium.
Well, there is a way to do it. It can be a designated tax, and normally it's not sales tax. The sales taxes are usually used to pay for other things, so that school taxes or property taxes can be used not to cover shortfalls. Look what has happened here in the state of Georgia since Roy Barnes was thrown out of the governor's office. Look what Sonny Perdue has done in 8 years. I don't care if a person's Democrat or Republican. Here in Georgia, all you have to do is take a look at the mess we're in. I mean, how did that happen? Well, to me, the way it happened is multi-layered, but part of the reason is because, for some reason, the people in Georgia decided we'd had enough prosperity, we'd had enough low unemployment numbers, we had enough black budgets, we had enough everything. We decided that we wanted to elect an entire slate of Republicans to destroy everything that Tom Murphy and the boys put into effect in the state over 35, 40 years. So here we are. I don't know what to tell you. As far as targeted tax. Targeted taxes, that can very easily be done. A. B. As far as not trusting government to get things done, I mean, you and I trust government every time we turn. You and I can't go 10 minutes without having to trust government of some sort. So I don't accept that line, Chris. I really don't. Now, as far as religious schools, I've had family members 40 years ago, 50 years ago, who went through Catholic school, and got a good education. I'm not saying that 50 years ago, 40 years ago, I don't know how old you are, but if you went through a religious school, I bet you by God it was at least 35 years ago.
I didn't go to a religious school. I went to a public school.
Oh, okay.
And I'm a product of a public school, and I feel like I'm, you know, fairly successful.
Right.
My fiance teaches in a public school, high school. She teaches special ed.
Right.
We're not opponents of public schools, but I am a proponent of sending my child, and I don't have a child, but when I do, if I do, I want to send them to the best school. And if the best school in my area is not public, it happens to be the religious school down the road, then I think that's okay.
Well, to me, when you say religious school, the first word is religion, not school. So if you want to send your child to a religious school, that's certainly your right. I mean, it's still your right. Eventually, it will not be our right. Eventually, it'll be what we're required to do if the fascists win. But if you send your child to a religious school, the first thing he or she is going to learn is religion, not about religion, but a certain religion. If you send your child to a Muslim school or a Jewish school or a Christian school, that's what they're going to learn about. They're going to learn religious doctrine. The education, whatever constitutes education in the school, will be secondary to the religion. That's why it's called a religious school. And here in the South, and you know this as well as I do, Chris, here in the South, when they talk about religious schools, they're talking about fundamentalist Christian. And fundamentalist Christian really do believe that the entire universe is about 7,000 years old. No thanks. Before I would do that, I think I would homeschool. Chris, I got to leave there. Thanks, pal. We'll be right back.
Because the past is just a goodbye. Teach
Joy Show. All substance, no abuse.
It's 21 past the hour. A couple emails here before we go back to your calls. This is from Peter. Mike, someday, hopefully soon, the kiddies will be so dumb as to be unemployable. The potholes will be so large that they swallow you and your ride. The rolling blackouts will be so long. And minuscule credit currently awarded to small businesses will finally completely end. Now, someone might ask where the money is going. $1 million for a cruise missile? $5 billion for a Trident? Is this necessary? Then there will be a spontaneous movement to straighten things out. It seems to be similar to alcoholism, where the situation has to become so intolerable that something has to be done. Hang in there. Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. That's why in November of 08, I suggested that people go ahead and vote for Palin and McCain. Get it over with. Regarding war versus education, Claude in New Jersey writes, Mike, how right you are. Just this week, a reporter was on Fresh Air on NPR and was explaining what the Afghans tell the Marines, which is, quote, you are here today, but tomorrow you would be gone and the Taliban will move back in and kill us if we work with you. End quote. This honesty clearly indicates that our efforts to build a free and democratic Afghanistan is totally futile. Of course. Of course it is. How could it be otherwise? We are not interested in a free and democratic Afghanistan. We are interested in an Afghanistan that would function the way Bush and Cheney wanted Iraq to function, as a puppet of us or our oil companies. I said something last hour. Address to our international audience about, you know, consider yourselves lucky if you don't live here. This is from Australia. Don't worry, Mike. We are heading toward oblivion too. Our left wing, quote, quote, government has just approved a uranium waste dump site in Northern Territory, which I presume will pave the way for the world's radioactive waste to be dumped here. Where will all those warheads go that Obama wants to eliminate? This was approved without proper consultation with the indigenous people in the region. The left is like the right, no difference. All will be incorporated. Nothing will be public any longer. More and more repressive laws and the elimination of human rights or equal rights continue to be eroded. The Anti-Discrimination Act in Australia, I believe, was suspended. How racist is that? In order to force indigenous people off their lands into towns. Otherwise, their benefits would be cut off so that corporations can do mining tests for uranium, etc. The scum are in big government. And in big corporations and in big media. We may have a better health and education system than the USA, but the USA does have some good EPA laws, some great food control, and animal rights laws. Well, not so great, Paris. Well, at least I can say somewhat better than here. We certainly don't care for our environment here, not by the majority, not by government and corporations. Our man, Mr. Garrett, has turned, sold his soul, etc. He's your prime minister, I guess. But I will stay optimistical. Cheers, Paris in the land of Oz. Oh. And we have a couple more here, which we'll get to momentarily. Chuck is in Knoxville, Tennessee, listening on Sirius. Hey, Chuck. Yo, Chuck. Chuck. Chuck, are you there? All right, Chuck's not there. Sorry about that. These are too long to try to squeeze in now. So he said as he crumpled them up. Well, no, here, this is from Kevin in Madison. Mike, the banksters were unquestionably sleazy in their handling of the current crisis, but all they did was get in the way of an invisible trend. Kevin wants me to believe it's not the bank's fault. He says, that trend was set in motion by the major corporations aided by Reagan, Bush, Clinton, and Bush. This crisis would have been no more than a bump in the road if real wages hadn't fallen since the Reagan era. It's the devaluing of labor that has crushed this economy. I remember seeing a hidden camera video shot by ABC of all companies of Tom DeLay addressing a group of slavers. Oops, I mean businessmen in the Seychelles. Is that how you pronounce that? Islands. He was telling them how their business model, 12-hour days, 6 days a week, few dollars an hour, no overtime pay, workers in barbed wire and circled barracks, was what, quote, we want for America, end quote. No idea who he meant as we, but it sure as hell did include me. This is back in the late 90s. I've tried to find the clip in the inner tubes, but have had no success. Yeah, the banksters have been real SOBs in all this, but the root cause of the crisis lies at the feet of the multinationals and the politicians, both right and left, but let's be honest, mostly right, who enabled them. Kevin, yeah, I remember that. That was when Tom DeLay, I saw that video too, when Tom DeLay was explaining to the American corporations that had located in the Mariana Islands and being run by Chinese overseers, slavers, who would bring in slave labor. And Tom DeLay was telling these people, yeah, we're proud of you. You're the future of America. You're the future of America.
Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
I forgot to repeat the address. So those of you who are regular listeners, you know who Marge is. Marge from Maryville, Indiana. We haven't heard from her for quite some time. Got an email from her son today who lives in San Francisco. Marge is in the hospital, has been for a while. I'm not exactly sure how serious the situation is, but to be, you know, I don't want to ask her son if I can talk on the air about what she's dealing with. I don't know anyway, but anyway, she's been out of touch with us for a long time, and her son RJ remembers when last time, several years ago, when Marge was sick, but she stayed at home, I think, and we gave out her home address, and people sent her get well cards. So he didn't ask for cards. He just said he said that she's always been a big fan of your show, and, well, any good thoughts and good wishes you wanted to send out to her would be appreciated. I know how touched she was by the postcards a few years ago. You know, that's about all he said, other than, hi, folks, wanted to let you know that my mom, Marge from Maryville, is in the hospital right now. She's always been a big fan, yada, yada. So I just thought it would be a nice thing to send Marge a get-well card. What the heck? So you send it to her son, not directly to Marge, and he will read them to her over the phone, and then, I guess, box them up and send them all when she comes home. So, in response to several requests, are you ready to take this down? The son's name is RJ. This is RJ. RJ Johnson. Johnson. No T in it, just Johnson. RJ Johnson. His street address is 2694, 2694. 19th Avenue, 2694 19th Avenue, San Francisco. And the zip is 94116. All right, give it to you again. R.J. Johnson, this is Marge's son. R.J. Johnson, 2694 19th Avenue, San Francisco 94116. All right. So just a, you know, a get well card, a Hey Marge card, a funny card. You know Marge's sense of humor. Oh my God. So, and the weird part is, she's a great fan of the show. It goes back to when Kathy and I, 12-13 years ago, when we were in Chicago, working for WLS in Chicago. Well, just me. Kathy was in school up there. But that's when Marge started listening. And then we came here, came back to Atlanta, and the only way Marge is able to hear the program now is by calling in and listening on the phone, because she doesn't have a computer. Now, several years ago, when that fact became known, a bunch of listeners said, hey, we'll chip in and buy Marge a computer. But, and she was very gracious in thanking everybody for that idea. But she said no. She just, you know, I'm not sure why, but, she decided not to do that. That she would just continue to listen as best she could. So, I mean, if you're in this business, especially on my end of it, you've got to really, really, really respect somebody who's that loyal, that they continue to listen. We haven't lived in Chicago since 2000, 10 years. 10 years. It's been that long since Marge was able to hear us on the radio. And she doesn't have XM or Sirius. And she did not want a computer. Paid for, you know, with donations from the group or her son. You know, her son would have bought it for her. But you know, she just said, no thanks. So, she listens by dialing up to talk, and we'll leave her on the phone for half an hour so she can listen. And then, you know, we take her call. But we'd started wondering, just like we got a few emails from people, ironically, over the past couple of days. Where's Marge? Haven't heard from her for a long time. All right, now you know. So let me give it to you one more time. R.J. Johnson is her son's name. R.J. Johnson. And send the card to 2694 19th Avenue. 2694 19th Avenue, San Francisco, 94116. All right? Okay. John is in Costa Mesa, California. Hey, John.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, go ahead.
Quick question. I'm going to get the speaker off.
Yeah, that'd be good.
I want to see how you felt about the way, two questions actually. I want to see how you felt illegal immigration was affecting schools in Southern California, and also what do you think about vouchers for school?
How immigration is affecting schools in Southern California?
Illegal immigration in Southern California.
I don't know, because I don't live there. I live a continent away, so I don't know what y'all are dealing with.
We'll just say we have a lot of illegal immigrants here.
Okay.
A lot of them.
Well, I don't know how to answer it. Here in Georgia, we have illegal immigrants, but we just give everybody a chance to get an education, even though our school system is collapsing too. But it's not, it's not because of, immigrants, illegal or otherwise. It's because, we here in Georgia, like you people in California, decided you didn't want to pay any more taxes, so to hell with it. What was the second question?
How do you feel about school vouchers?
I look at them very with a lot of suspicion. They're very suspect to me because if there's no money to run a public school, where a school voucher? Where's the money for school vouchers going to come from? They come from the government, right?
Well, my understanding is the same place that the money to run the schools. It would just be given to people to direct the money rather than.
Right. But the money comes from the same place. I mean, where's the money going to come? Where's the money going to come from for vouchers? I would rather not see a voucher system because they are inherently, as far as I'm concerned, inherently racist. A voucher is a way for a for a white person to say, I don't want to be around all these non-whites. I use my school voucher. And go someplace else.
But it would also be available for, say, a black kid to go to a white school.
Yeah,
both ways.
You'd think that, wouldn't you? But have you ever seen it work that way? If you have, good on you.
I haven't seen it at all.
I have yet to see it work that way. But, of course, I live in the South.
Yeah, I don't know anywhere where they're doing it, actually, right. So I don't know.
So voucher system to me is just another way to undercut or undermine the public school system. If there's money for vouchers, John, it would seem to me there would be money to fund the public school system. The public school system has been critical in this country to everything that we've ever been. It's only been in the past, I don't know, what, 8, 10 years, maybe 15, that it started to go into the tank, down the commode, into the sewer system. And I think that is deliberate, and it's calculated, and it's being done by the right wing. That's what I believe. Chuck, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. Who's this? All right. Jeremy is in Burlington, Vermont, listening on Sirius. Hey, Jeremy.
Hi, Mike. I'd like to know how we want to go to Afghanistan and change them, but we know that Great Britain failed in the 1800s. They sent in, I think, 28,000 soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And the Taliban let, or not the Taliban, but the Afghans let one soldier leave alive. And he was a doctor, and they told him, tell them what we're going to do to your people.
Uh-huh.
We go in, and we think we can win after they and the Soviets lost.
Well, you can go back further. It's my understanding Alexander the Great tried to, on his trip to India, tried to subdue the Afghans. It didn't work. Genghis Khan, prior to or subsequent to Alexander the Great, tried to subdue the Afghans. Didn't work. So, you know, the phrase about Afghanistan is where empires go to die. So I don't know that this craziness about Afghanistan. The original idea was to provide a secure U.S. puppet government in Afghanistan so that our America-based transnational oil companies would be secure in building pipelines across that country into Pakistan and then into the Indian Ocean to bring out all of that oil and gas in the Caspian Sea area before the Russians got it. So as far as bringing, excuse me, democracy to a country that's been tribal for about 4,000 years, that's madness. It's not going to change. If Afghanistan does change to a different form of government, it'll start from inside Afghanistan. It's not going to be imposed. I mean, you know, Afghanistan is just the a different word for Vietnam. It's crazy. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I was going to say, I'm dumbfounded at how our government can look at all these great civilizations that have failed and tried. And I mean, not just failed slowly, but failed greatly at doing what they're trying to do to them.
You'd think somebody could wake up and smell that particular coffee, wouldn't you, Jeremy? Thanks, man. I gotta go. Thanks for checking in.
Destruction can't be easy to defend when all your heroes have abandoned you, or have you abandoned them? From civilians to enemies, bombs can't discern. They just destroy all in their path. Will we ever
10 before the hour. Don't forget tomorrow. We got an email from Laura. There was an emergency in her family. It's a long story, but we're going to reschedule Laura Flanders. Possibly Friday. What do you think, Kathy? Yeah, possibly Friday or maybe Monday, but we'll have her on the program. Tomorrow and Friday, I've got a two-parter here for you from Bob Alexander, who writes The Moment with Bob, acerbic, cynical pieces for this program that we all love so much. And he's come up with something different that I want to share with you. It was his idea. He ran it by me. I said, yeah, write it. It's a two-parter. About the length, each part's about the length of one of his moments with Bob. But if you are a cigarette smoker, I desperately want you to hear this tomorrow, okay? Take 3 or 4 minutes for me to read it to you. But if you're a cigarette smoker, I don't care how much you enjoy it. I don't care if you've been told by your doctor you got to quit or you're going to die. You know, just whatever. Whatever your situation is, if you're a cigarette smoker, maybe I should add a little tagline. If you're a cigarette smoker, who's ever wanted to quit? But I think every cigarette smoker somewhere inside their head wants to quit. I mean, how long have we known that the stuff is toxic and it kills us? I mean, it just kills us. And, you know, I don't talk about this very much. I'm a former smoker. And I've said a million times, you know, I quit 8 years ago, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to develop lung cancer because I smoked for a long time. And that's, you know, you roll the dice when you're a cigarette smoker. You convince yourself, not me. and for most cigarette smokers, that's true. You don't die of lung cancer, you die of something else that's brought on by cigarettes. I'm not going to get preachy. I just want you to hear what Bob has written. So tomorrow night and Friday, tune in. I found it mucho interesting. Very interesting. Chris is in Marietta, Georgia, listening on Sirius. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Mike. How you doing, man?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Listen, I started listening to you guys the first day I moved to Georgia from Southern California.
Wow.
I got serious, and I guess I started listening right before Molly was born, and my youngest was born maybe 8 months after Molly was born.
I'll be darned. Well,
and I'm damn near your age, too, so.
Oh, wow. Well, thanks. I appreciate that. So you moved into Marietta, Georgia, huh?
Yep, Marietta in the heart of...
Oh, yeah.
God by God County.
Yeah, I know. I've been in the Atlanta area for about 40 years now, so trust me, I know about Cobb County. Oh, my God. But anyway,
yep.
I do admire your courage, or maybe it's perversity. I don't know what it is, but for moving into Cobb County, good for you.
Well, I got a concealed carry permit, too. Just
oh,
like
do you?
Me,
okay.
So.
Well, then you know. Hold on just a second. Everybody, you hear this? You hear this? The only reason I have one of those permits is because of what happened to me where it concerned Cobb County. And here's Chris, who lives there. And
there you go.
Yeah, man.
There you go. And I am a diehard, I guess I would have to call myself a leftist.
A what?
A leftist.
Oh, okay. You're not a liberal.
No, I'm not a liberal.
No, me either. I used to be a liberal, but I kind of outgrew it.
Yeah, I was a progressive for about 28 minutes. but I do have a comment, because I moved here from SoCal.
Yeah.
And I got a comment on, and I'm trying to be kind here, but the idiot that just called about vouchers.
Right, right.
Yeah, if you don't like the fact that there are... quote-unquote, illegal immigrants coming into your school district, try and remember two things. Number one, the original illegal immigrants were the Caucasians that came from Europe. And number two, school vouchers are nothing more than subsidizing people that can afford to send their kids to private schools, because most of us can't, and even with a voucher.
Right, that's
true.
We
couldn't afford this. So it's subsidizing people like, I'm afraid, probably the previous caller was, who, oh, I want to send my kid to a private school if I only had a voucher.
Right, and a lot of those vouchers wind up in the hands of religious or semi-religious schools, because you know, you live here, you live in this area like I do. The average private school, you want to send your kid to first grade at a good private school in Atlanta, it's going to cost you 16 grand a year.
At a minimum. I had a friend that's paying $22,000 a year.
Yeah, this is madness. And the average voucher, voucher is what, $3,000-$4,000? Where is that going to go? Where's that money going to go? It's damn sure not going to go to one of these elite private schools in the Atlanta area. You know, I've college educated three of my adult children. Well, I'm on the third one. And when my daughter, Wendy, went to University of Georgia, it cost me all of about under $7,000 a year to send her a full-time student at University of Georgia. So I have a son now who's University of South Carolina. It cost me about $11,000 to send him there. First grade, $16,000?
Yeah, I went to University of Florida. It cost me about $8,500.
Well, there you go. Well,
you know, and the thing is, too, is I got to tell you, Cobb County Schools gave the principals of each individual school the option of hearing Obama's speech.
Yeah, I remember that. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, and so my daughter's school, the principal said, no, it'd be too disruptive. And then a week ago, the principal comes on every morning, gives the students a math challenge, and they said, okay, how many letters are in the name of our former great president, George W. Bush? That was the math challenge question.
Listen, I'm going to have to go be sick. Chris, thanks a lot, man. We're flat out of time. I got to go. I hope you call again. Thanks for being such a good listener. I appreciate that very much. I'll see you tomorrow night, folks. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.